I could open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride, a whole new world, a new fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say we're only dreaming a whole new world.
Dude, hey, you're buddy. Awesome. This is gonna be a great interview. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Talking to Earthlings with Lunakai, where we explore the humanism within all of us. Today, we welcome actor and writer Nathan Butler. He graduated from the National Institute of Dramatic Art, has worked with notable actors like Hugh Jackman and Aaron Paul, and grew up on a ranch in the outback of Australia. Nathan, thank you so much for being here today.
Of course, Lunakai. Stoked to be here. I actually want to add, I did grow up on a ranch, but I was actually born on a ship off the Gulf of Carpentaria of Australia, so at the top of Australia. And I guess, you know, the first like few months of my life, I lived on this ship, and my dad and his three brothers, Warren, Barry, and Eddie, and John, they were kind of like modern day pirates. And you know, I was like, obviously I was so little, but you know, my dad and mum would tell me these stories. But you know, they would like, you know, raid ships and like, you know, to get money. And then they eventually came into Australia and they bought the ranch. And then that's where I grew up and lived my life. But yeah, that didn't happen. That's just a joke.
Oh.
It's April Fool's Day, so April Fool's. Gotcha.
You did get yeah. me.
Anyway, I just thought of that while you were giving my intro.
I was literally about to be like, your parents were pirates.
But actually, crazy story, and this is true.
I'm questioning it.
You're gonna think everything's false now, but no, but this is actually true. So my dad and his brothers, right? He only had two brothers, Warren and Barry, but his brothers were actually outlaws, and I'm honest. So they used to, and I was old enough now to remember this. I remember Dad used to leave, and they used to go on horseback, and they'd ride into the outback, and the ranches around us, or the properties around us, I'm not joking, this is actually...
Okay.
They were owned by government, and so they used to go into, you know, these areas and steal government cattle and come back,
oh, wow.
you know, with government cows, kind of like Robin Hood, you know, like stealing from the rich, giving to the poor kind of thing. And yeah, they did that. Like, they honestly did that. And my grandma, Nana May, she was also kind of like the kingpin of it. Like, she was like, you know, we owe money to the banks, we need money now, like we don't have enough cattle. And so they would go. And then, you know, it was the 60s and 70s in Australia, and there was really no police, like in terms of like now there's helicopters and like they, you know, it's the stock squad, they call it, the cattle police. And now it's harder, you can't really do that. You know, it's called cattle duffing in Australia, or potty dodging, and cattle rustlers, I guess you call it in America. But they honestly did that. And they did it a few times, and they got like, I don't know, thousands of head of cattle.
Yeah.
And so they were kind of outlaws, you know, in a sense. So, and I grew up in that world, you know, and they were wild. They were wild cowboys. And, you know, they had guns, and they were tall, and they had beards, and they had chaps, and like American kind of, that's that image, you know, and that's what they were. So
you guys are so much more badass than us. You guys go cattle duffing, we go cow tipping.
Right? Wait, what's cow tipping?
Cow tipping is literally what teenagers do, where you're just bored and you go and you just push a cow over, right?
Oh.
Which is super cruel.
Oh, cow tipping.
Because they literally can't get up.
Oh,
it's just
goodness.
Like, it's a cruel pastime that some teenagers do.
Right. So it's like one of those things like planking, or I don't know, all those.
It's like a, yeah.
Weird, okay.
I don't
got
know.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah, man.
So my first question for you is, had an Aussie kid raised on a cattle ranch in Queensland become a celebrity in LA. Did milking cows just not float your boat?
You called me a celebrity. My ego just went left. But no, yeah, I'll take it. You know, my mom was always a singer. She was a country music singer, you know, and she was touring and doing things. So at a young age, I was always performing. I was always singing and playing guitar. And then during school, it was actually during high school, it was because of my, I kind of dropped all that too. Once I started school, I was like, oh, I can't be a singer and a musician anymore. It's kind of, and where I grew up, it's very, I guess you could call it like redneck kind of era. I was like, I can't be a singer and be viewed that way. I got to be a football player and I got to be tough, you know? And so it was at high school that my little sister wanted to audition for the high school musical. And she's like, Nathan, please, I want to do this duet with you. You're a really great singer. You know, can you do it with me? I'm like, no, I can't do that. You know, my friends will think I'm gay. Like, no. And like, it's crazy. Like, what was that? I was a kid. What was I thinking? You know? And then she ended up getting me to do it. And we sang A Whole New World from Aladdin. And my sister got a chorus role, and the director and drama teacher, she wanted me to play the lead in the musical, which was the Threepenny Opera, to play Mac the Knife, an awesome role. I mean, I didn't know then, but like, I didn't want to. I said, no, I'm not doing it. I was just here for my sister. And she chased me around for like 2 weeks around the school, finding me everywhere, going like, Nathan, you have to do it. There's no one who can play him here. There's no one, you know, even. And so I was like, no. And I finally said yes. And then I'm so glad I did, because it was amazing. You know, I was in like a huge theater in the main town where we lived, you know, and it was a, whatever, like an 800 seat theater that was packed, and I was on stage and performing for a week as this guy, and it felt amazing. And then I went on to do many other musicals and productions, and then I auditioned for NIDA when I was 17 and got in, and here I am, dude, that's it. You know, that's it, so.
That's awesome. You mentioned that your mother was a country singer. Did she inspire your love for the stage? And also, what other actors influenced you as a young actor?
I'm glad you asked that, Luna Kai. You know, my mom inspired me so much. You know, like her imagination. She still does. You know, she's still with us. And her imagination and her, like, just her beautiful soul and the way she is as a person, you know, like she's a poet and a lyricist and a, you know, just a, she's just like a flower that was out there in this harsh, like, environment. And she really, you know, made my childhood such a joy, and even my life now such a joy, because she's constantly so inspiring. And I forget the next part of the question that you said. What was it?
It was, which actors inspired you as a young actor?
Actually, interestingly, what kind of made me kind of audition for NIDA and gave me that next kind of impulse to take that leap and audition for the National Institute was the NIDA graduates, they actually came to my town and did a play. And I was just like, wow, look at these guys, you know, and girls, they're incredible. I was like, saw them up on the stage, and I was like, it just inspired me to no end. And then, you know, once I got into NIDA and then I met them, and like that, then just, they just become friends and colleagues. And then you realize that like, you're now one of them, you know, but like, that was it. I was like, these guys are amazing, you know, just so much confidence and, you know, like just these characters they're playing, and it just seemed like so much fun.
So you must have done well in acting to get into the National Institute of Dramatic Art. 1,500 people apply for 185 student positions.
And, I don't know what the number is, but I think it's somewhere crazy like that. You know, like thousands of people apply, and they choose for all the different departments, you know, of the entertainment industry, they choose, you know, 20 people. Like they chose 20 people for the acting class, and then, you know, so many for the directing and whatever. But yeah, 20 out of whatever, a few thousand people, you know. It was it was amazing. To get in was like you get on a short list of 50 people. And then, you know, I remember them calling me right before Christmas time in 2002, I think. And yeah, they called me, and you know, my mum was there, and I couldn't believe it. Actually, my mum was more excited than I was. I answered the phone. I was like, oh, what? I was like, we're accepting you. You got in. You're into the National Institute. I was like, okay, mum. And I like gave the phone to her, and then she got the information, and she like got excited, and I did, and yeah, and it was so great, such an amazing experience to go there.
I can tell that your mom really means a lot to you.
She really does. Yeah, she's just a beautiful human being, you know.
It's amazing.
Thanks.
So your first big role in the States was General Hospital, right?
Right. Yeah, that's right. I played Dr. Ewan Keenan.
How is working as a soap opera actor different from stage and or film?
I think just the amount of time you have to prepare. I can remember driving to work and like, you know, trying to memorize my lines while I was driving to work, you know, because I'd have 30 pages of dialogue to memorize that day or more, sometimes more. You know, we were squeezing in almost 2 45-minute episodes per day, so you can imagine. And the brain can only handle so much, and after a certain point in time, like, I don't know, it was usually for me after lunchtime, I would, you know, I would just go up on a line, which means I would just dry on a line. I would just, you know, I just don't know what the next thing is. I'm sorry, but I need to go back, you know, and I would have to apologize and go back. But that would be the main difference. But other than that, I think it's, you know, I guess on the stage you would maybe have to project more, you know, if you're, you know, unless you're doing music theater and you're mic'd up, but, you know, projection may be a thing, but the acting should essentially be the same in that it's just, it's got to be grounded in reality, I guess, or like come from an authentic place. You know, that's what's similar.
General Hospital is the longest running soap opera in production, is that correct?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure what year they're on now, but well over 50 years, I think it's been on air. That was an honor to work on and to be introduced as a new character in something that's been around for so long.
Yeah. But you haven't been on it since when?
I think my last episode was, I want to say 2012?
All right, so Nathan, can you give us an example of a short scene from a soap opera? You're Dr. Ewan Keaton, and I'm a man whose finger is stuck up my nose.
Okay. What's your character's name first? We should start there. I gotta know your name. What's your name?
My name is Ethan Bubbles.
Okay. I mean, I already can see my voice is starting to come down. I'm getting more serious, you know? And you kind of start to lean in, especially as the scene progresses, so. Bubbles, you've been blowing too many bubbles, and what's happened, see, I'm just being, as your doctor, you know, I just want to be honest with you, but what's happened is, you, after trying to catch the bubble, you've put your finger up your nose, and I think it's going to be stuck there, and you're going to have to deal with it.
Well, Dr. Keaton, I was just trying to see if I could go as far as the COVID swab.
No, I get it. Sometimes you gotta go right up there, you know, especially if you wanna really be clear whether you've contracted COVID or not. You have to be safe. Now just lean in a little bit towards me and let me really have a look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to pull it out. It's lodged up there.
It is. Yeah, it's gonna hurt a lot pulling it out, but it's like ripping off that Band-Aid. Eventually, you're gonna just have to do it. Okay. How do you feel?
I feel alive.
Yeah? Okay, hold that. While we hold here, they're gonna move the cameras in really slow on us. Okay, and a commercial break, that's it. That was good, man. Good scene, dude. Good scene. Woo! That was some good acting, guys. That was some great acting, you know? They'll be so happy with that up in the booth, dude.
I know, right? I think I might need some hand sanitizer, too. I essentially just picked my nose.
Yeah, and I high-fived him.
Well, okay. I luckily high-fived you with the other hand. I did that purposely. Okay.
All right, here I'm gonna get some too. All right, yeah, go on. It's COVID. We gotta be responsible.
Oh my gosh, so good.
That was fun.
I love that you just went, this is why you got into that freaking school, man. You just went for it. You didn't even hesitate for a second.
I went for it, man. Actually, this is, and I don't know if this was a little bit pre-planned, but I knew that a lot of the teachers are homosexuals or and which I love, whatever, but I did a scene where I actually masturbated in the audition, and not physically, but I did a scene from Equus, the scene where the kid is like masturbating naked on a horse. It's a famous play by Peter Schaefer.
Yeah.
And I did that scene and I was like, I mean, I don't know if it excited them, but I imagine it was pretty, pretty full on to see too, like he's telling this monologue as he's riding wild on this horse and he's like getting off and it was quite full on, but
And he just went for it.
Just went for it, dude. I'm like, whatever, I'm just gonna do it.
YOLO.
YOLO. YOLO, man. That's it. And I was 17, so I literally was so YOLO.
Yeah. So tell us about some of the other roles you've played. What was your favorite and why?
The most recent role I played, which was one of my favorites, was the one I played on Hawaii Five-0. I was playing a villain and Nick Town. And that was just fun. I just loved playing a villain because I just got to do stuff that I didn't necessarily do so much in my career. I was on another show in Australia and I was, just basically a lot closer to the character I am, which is still good, but just playing a villain and getting to do something totally different is just fun, So that was awesome. That was great.
So I noticed that you said on Instagram that the greatest role you will ever play is being a father. And by the looks of your photos, you're loving that role.
Lunakai, absolutely. That is absolutely 100% true. I love being a father. I love, I don't even have to play the role of a father because I am a father. So I guess I kind of want to maybe rewrite my Instagram bio to just, I love the role of just playing at life. I just love life. And my kids are a huge part of that. Yeah, I love them so much, getting to adventure and do all this stuff that, you don't necessarily want to do as adults. Because we get so constrained and like burdened by our adult lives that we don't want to do that stuff. But it gets you to, it kind of forces you in a way to be a kid again, to experience what it feels like to like put your hand in the sun for the first time again, or touch the grass, or play in the sand, or like, it's so wonderful to have children, and yeah, it's a blessing. It's awesome. Love them.
What are the most important values you want to teach your kids?
That's a very interesting question. Obviously we think what we're teaching our kids is right. And that's what we want to teach them, the right values. So whatever that really is, I like to hope that I'm being a good parent or a great parent in teaching them the correct or the right values in life. But at the end of the day, I don't think it matters, because kind of whatever happens and whatever is that's what it is, So even if you were a bad parent or you thought you were a bad parent, your child could go on to be someone like super successful, Or even if you did come from a broken past or whatever, you could still go on to do amazing things and be, super successful. Or even in some people's eyes, like not as that successful, like financially wise, but still successful in life in the meaning of that. You're just still enjoying your life fully and you're fulfilled. And you're a fulfilled person. Like, for example, I did a film in Africa, and while I was there, we were filming in this little village in the middle of nowhere. And the people there were so happy. They had nothing. To me, they had nothing, like materialistically and whatever. But they were just so authentically happy. The kids and the adults and the elders, and they were just like, life is... you could see it's just so vibrant and beautiful in them. So, yeah, I guess I want to instill values in my kids so they'll grow up to live in a village in Africa. I'm just no, yeah, but you get it, like that.
Yeah, well, I've heard, and I find this very fascinating, that the margin for happiness, when you're speaking financially, between $0 and a living wage, like let's just say on a United States average, $50,000,
sure,
is much, the gap there or the margin there is much larger than like $50,000 to $1 billion. Because really what we, well, all we really need is our essentials. And then after that, there's room for more happiness, but the margin becomes less and less and less.
So it's so interesting. I mean, I love this conversation, you know, because yeah, it is that, Lunakai. It is that story of like, you hear of people who are super wealthy and famous and rich and whatever, and they talk about how the happiest days in their life was when they weren't. And when they were like working their way up there, it was actually the journey was actually more fulfilling and enjoyable than getting there. And I mean, it's almost the, you could look at it as the problem of the human race, or the one of the major, you know, things is that people just constantly striving to find this certain level of happiness. Well, the truth is that you can already have it wherever you are, right now, now.
That is so beautiful.
You know?
I love that. I love your energy, by the way.
Thanks, Lunakai. I love your energy.
Can
too,
we
dude.
Can we pound it?
I love yours too.
You're yeah. awesome,
you
man.
You are awesome.
No, you
no,
are.
You
no,
are.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Oh my gosh.
We could.
We seriously could.
You're my lost American brother.
Lost American brother. Yeah.
Beards and hair, or you know.
You know, it's so funny because we just got an Aussie in the family. My cousin just married an Aussie.
Yeah.
And also, my mom had a pin pal when she was 10 from Melbourne.
Cool.
And then they split for about 25 years, and he got into computers. I mean, this was back in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah.
And she had switched states and changed her last name because she got married, but they had been writing to each other for a good 8 years or something. He ended up finding her and sending her an email, and now they've been our good family friends ever since.
Oh, such a great story.
And then just one other funny story about this.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna throw it in there.
I'll make
it quick. My mom's email address has always been Killian77, mm-hmm. and Killian was her first golden retriever.
Mm.
Funny enough, the Australian pin pal's name was Ian. So when he first emailed her, he read Kill Ian.
Yeah, of course he read Kill Ian. That's all you would see if your name was Ian. You're like, oh my goodness. He's like, I don't know what I signed up for.
He's like, I'm not sure I want to email this person anymore.
So good.
So good.
Especially then, it was like almost the beginning of email. I would have been like, oh my gosh.
Totally.
You know, so much confusion and uncertainty around it.
Totally.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nathan, next question is really important. Is Vegemite just a cruel joke you guys play on Australian kids?
No, it's not. Vegemite is it's just an Australian staple. You know, it's like you just grow up with it, and you, like anything, you know, you develop a taste for it. When you have it as a kid, it's good. It's like salty, you know, on bread, like a salty paste on bread. It just tastes good, you know. I don't know. It's kind of like my wife's Russian, and she likes caviar, and I'm just like, ugh, you know, can't do that. But she's had it since she was little. So I guess, you know, Vegemite is like her caviar.
What,
you know?
Yeah, what, well, actually I was just about to ask you, what would be the American equivalent to Vegemite?
I'm not sure, maybe Spam? Someone said yeah.
Spam,
maybe,
yes.
Maybe Spam,
probably,
I guess.
Spam.
Right?
Probably Spam.
Yeah.
All right, Nathan, this next question is the most important question as it relates to the Talking to Earthing series, and that is, what does it mean to be human?
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be human? You know, I think we touched on some of this too in the part of, you know, me being a good role model, or, you know, what I wanted to instill in my children. And part of being human, what it is to be human, is just to be human. Just to live. Just to be here. Here. Right now, you know. I'm being human right now with you. Right here. Nowhere else, you know. I'm not thinking about what happened back then. I'm not thinking about what's going to happen next. I'm just thinking about what's happening right here. And I think that's what's about being human, connecting with humans, being with people, really taking people in, you know, taking them in 100% without judgment or without all this, whatever baggage you might be telling yourself or in your inner monologue, you know, that people all have these inner monologues in their head, you know, all those voices. It's like when you can get out of the way of them and just take in this person for who they are, that's life. That's living. All the rest doesn't matter. That's it.
Yeah. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for being here with Talking to Earthlings today. We really, really, really appreciate you coming. Obviously, we hadn't met before. I freaking love your energy, man. Yeah, dude, you have such good energy.
As soon as
I met you, I was like, this is one of my guys.
Yeah,
like, this guy could be a homie.
No doubt, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, but thank you for just sharing some of your experiences and your humanism. We really appreciate it.
All good. Thank you for sharing it with me, too, and having me here and giving me this opportunity to just be with you, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really mean it. Thanks.
I feel it. Thank you.
Nice, dude.
Yay! Yay!
Did you plug stuff earlier?
Oh, you know what? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, plug it.
No. Thank you for reminding me. I don't know why I missed that. Yeah. No, I'm gonna give you an opportunity to plug.
Ooh.
Do you have any upcoming projects, any films, anything on social media that you would like our audience to know about?
I do have something. I don't know when. I'm kind of writing it and developing it right now. But I am writing a TV show based kind of on my family's history called Far North. And I grew up in Far North Queensland, so it's called Far North. So, you know, that eventually will come to light. And, you'll probably find out about it everywhere, you know, I'm sure. But, I'm sure you'll find out, you know, if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's just my name, Nathan Butler, you know. And my first name is spelled with an I, so it's Nathin Butler, like the regular Butler. My name is spelled with an I because my brother's name was Colin. So my mum wanted the IN both to look the same. So that's it. Follow the Instas and you'll see what's going to happen.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Nathan with an I.
Thanks, Luna Kai. Kai. I just wanted to rhyme.
As a reminder, we've created Talking to Earthlings to have raw and honest conversation with one another in an effort to unite human beings who may not agree ideologically, but who can be inspired by one another's vulnerabilities. By watching our show, you are helping us accomplish our goal of changing the world one conversation at a time. Make sure to follow us on socials to stay updated. Thanks. Hey, what's up, podcasties? This is Luna Kai with Talking to Earthlings. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of TTE. If you would like to watch our episodes, you can check out our YouTube channel linked in the show notes. We post new interviews every Thursday. And if you enjoyed this episode of TTE, please make sure to give a review and share us with your friends. See you next week.